Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side, your Sleep Number setting. Enjoy personalized comfort for better sleep night after night. And now, during our President's Day sale, take 50% off our limited edition bed, plus an extra $100 off all mattresses. End Saturday. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all levels of professional baseball to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, the Tool Shed podcast has you covered with rankings, player analysis, and in-depth discussion. And now, here's your host, Eric Cross.
What's up, everyone? Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed Podcast brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 440. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We're going over some relievers today, both for short-term and long-term, and bringing on one of the best in the business to talk it over with me. He is a senior writer at Fantrax, a writer at Rotoballer, and co-host of the Fantasy Baseball Beat Podcast. One of the best in the business, one of my closest friends in this industry, Mr. Mike Carter at MDRC0508 on Twitter. Mike, how's it going, man?
Eric, how are you doing, man? It's good to see you. I know you've done 440 of these, and I feel like I've been on about 40 of them, but I know that's also not true. I always love coming on the show with you. I appreciate you having me on.
Actually, I can tell you. I should have said that. I actually kept track because I got bored one day and kind of like went through my guest list. You're definitely high up there. This is going to be your sixth appearance on the show. That might be low. I have to go back and check that. I feel like it's been more than six, but you've definitely been on one of the most frequent guests of this podcast over the years, and I always appreciate when you come on and share your wisdom here, especially on the topic that you are, you know, very astute at. Though, you know, you're good at everything. Not just relievers. You're good at everything.
I appreciate that, but relievers are a headache, aren't they? It never seems to really alleviate all that much, no matter what we do about it.
It's funny, like when you think you have it down, or you think like, oh yeah, I got a good plan, like, you know, whether it be like, you know, in a dynasty league or like a redraft, and you're like, all right, I'm going to approach it like this, and somebody gets hurt or somebody doesn't get the job, and it's just like there's always like that monkey wrench or a curveball thrown in where you're like, well, crap, now I got to like adjust and on the fly here. But not many guys are just like, you know, you look back. I should have looked back like even just like 5-6 years ago. It's like how many of these guys that are, you know, getting save opportunities now were also closers back then? You know, you got your Kenleys and your Chapman's, etc. So there's like a handful of them, but it's a lot of turnover year over year. So it's just a difficult position to, I think, stay on top of year in, year out.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, we really know just looking historically, and you look at Jeff Zimmerman's work, looking at bullpens over the course of time and what ends up happening, you know, about 40% of the guys that start with the job don't end with the job, you know. So yeah. Our conversion rate of trying to find these guys that are going to get saves for our teams is not very good. And so we do try to look at some of the tea leaves, and we pay attention to what's going on. But, you know, I'll be darned if I could tell you who's going to have 40 saves this year. I know somebody will, but I'm not going to be able to tell you who it's going to be tonight.
Yeah. If anybody can figure that out, and, you know, buy a lottery ticket, go down to Atlantic City or Vegas or something and test your luck there, because, yeah, it's definitely not an easy task to figure out. But let's hop right into it here. We got some, you know, I guess some ADPs here. I mean, it's not technically like a redraft episode. It's kind of like everything episode. I'm talking about relievers, but I feel like, you know, looking at some redraft numbers here, some ADP could kind of give us an idea of like, all right, who is getting valued highly right now, like right here in 2026. And looking at, this is NFBC Draft Champions ADP in this month, just February. So it's been like 14 or 15 drafts. You got 15 guys alone in the top 100, and they always get pushed up a bit in, you know, NFBC formats, you know, for the most part, especially those DCs where you've got to get your guys and get those saves where you can. So there's really no in-season moves there, but, you know, probably take, you know, take the number, add 50% to it, and that's probably your ADP in Yahoo or something like that. Somebody going like 50s, probably more like 75 in Yahoo, et cetera, et cetera. We look at, there's kind of like a little mini top tier here. Five guys all going between like 25 and around 33. It's Mason Miller with the Padres, Edwin Diaz now with the Dodgers, of course, Cade Smith with Cleveland, Andrés Muñoz with Seattle, and Yoan Duran now with the Phillies. A couple of new names, new places there. I wanted to start with Cade Smith, though, and it kind of just goes right back to what we were just talking about with how things can change so quickly. You know, if you were rolling with Emmanuel Clase in a dynasty league, or, you know, drafted him over the years in redraft, was looking pretty good. He's been one of the, you know, top relievers, you know, over the last, you know, really half decade or so now, and now we probably never see him pitch another inning in baseball because of all the, you know, all that stuff he was doing, you know, fixing pitches and stuff like that, throwing balls in the dirt on purpose, you know. But now he's you know, that was a no-no, and he's out of there. Cade Smith is in, who's been, you know, one of the better setup guys in baseball over the last, you know, few years as well for Class A. So now he moves into being the guy in that bullpen. And, you know, he's being drafted as the third RP off the board on average. And a lot of high expectations after the last 2 years he's had. 191 ERA as a rookie in 2024. 293 last year, over 70 innings both years, over 100 Ks both years. You look at Savant, a lot of red there. So really good-looking Savant page, too. So now that he's stepping into being a full-time closer, and he did get 16 saves last year, but now first year as a full-time guy, like, do you think Cade Smith is going to stick as a top five reliever, you know, moving forward here?
You know, it's funny, Eric, because we talked about this on one of the last shows, and we talked about where we thought Cade Smith might actually fall in these ranks for this year based on the idea that Class A would not be returning. And I said, well, I could see top 10, top 12 easily. The leagues are valuing him very highly, and you can understand why. You know, Stephen Vogt likes to use the bullpen. He uses them almost every other day on average. These guys are going to pitch over 70 games. The chances for him getting 30 saves with ERA and WHIP that are going to be helpful for you, and then also getting those 100 strikeouts. You know, that's the thing that's really important in looking at closers that I think a lot of people miss out on, is looking at, you know, hey, look at the saves. We need the saves. Yes, we need the saves. Ratios are helpful too. But sometimes these guys can have a 50 strikeout difference between them easily, and that could be really hard to make up in certain places later on. So I think you're obviously paying a very high price for Cade Smith right now because a lot of people expect him to be one of the top five guys. I think that's a fair assumption. I know we didn't talk about Munoz, but Munoz scares me for a variety of different reasons. You know, I think he was pitching with a little bit of injury last year, and Seattle also has Matt Brash that they've used in those situations as well. We can't predict what managers are going to do. We know that managers fall in love with the idea of a guy, you know, coming in the sixth inning and getting big outs there, and then don't always necessarily care who gets those last three outs for the save like we do. I do think that the tea leaves here, and looking at it, that Cade Smith would be leaned on heavily as the closer in Cleveland at this time. I don't see any reason why you would, you know, knock his value down in any way, shape, or form. I think you're going to get 30 saves. I think you're going to get 100 strikeouts. I think you're going to get an ERA under 3. And you're going to have a decent whip in that too. So that's really pretty helpful when you're starting off with a top-line closer. And let's face facts. You know, you pointed out it out a minute ago. You have 15 closers going in the top 100 picks. What are people thinking? You need fewer saves right now to be competitive in most of the top leagues. And so I think what people are thinking is, if I can get a sure bet 35 save guy, I can kind of Frankenstein the back end of this a little bit. Like, you know, maybe you take a Mason Miller and say, oh, Sir Anthony Dominguez is probably going to get 20 to 25 saves. And if I have a good guy that I take in the first four or five rounds, I can sort of Frankenstein this thing at the back end of it, right? So that seems to be what people are thinking. I know it's early in draft season and we're getting into the meat of it now. So it'll be interesting to see in these so-called expert leagues how closers get valued. But I have no problem with Cade Smith being a top five closer off the board at this point.
Man, I love that Frankenstein. Like, I feel like that's what I'm doing most years with my with my relievers. It's like, you know, it doesn't matter like who I end up getting after the draft or whatever. It's like, I feel like end of the year, it's like maybe one guy that I drafted and stole my team. You know, it's like, you know, somebody gets hurt, somebody just loses the job. You know, pick up a guy or two off the waiver wire throughout the year, and all of a sudden your relief corps at the end of the year looks a lot different than it did in February or March. So I love that term.
It's such a bad bet, right? I mean, last year in Tout, I came out of Tout thinking I'm going to spend, you know, $35 on two closers, right? So I'm like, I got Devin Williams and I got David Bednar. I'm like, I'm set. I'm good. Well, then what ends up happening? Williams is terrible. The Yankees trade for Bednar. So now I've got a half of a closer and another guy that's completely useless to my team, you know, and it killed me. It killed my, you know, killed my season, really.
I mean, that Yankees bullpen last year was so weird. It's like they trade for all those guys, and then like nothing really worked out. But then Bednar kind of, you know, finds his footing, and now he's the guy there in New York. But it's that was just like a weird bullpen,
very odd
for the Yankees.
Agreed.
We were so used to Rivera for so long, and now it's kind of been in the they had Chapman for a long time. So that's been a position where, for most part, for the Yankees, you know, they were pretty set for a long time with a few guys that are pretty good. And then last year, it just kind of went all awry. But Bednar he's sixth right there in ADP, right at 40. And then you got Devin Williams right behind him. He's now with the Mets. Then you got Chapman in Boston, who just had like a ridiculous bounce back year. Like this shows you know, how quickly things can change year to year. Where, you know, this time last year, there was a legitimate debate in Boston, or really all across baseball, but specifically in Boston, where it's like, all right, is it going to be Liam Hendricks or is it going to be Aroldis Chapman? And admittedly, I'll admit when I'm wrong, I was Team Hendricks. I did not have a ton of faith in Chapman. I didn't really like him just in general, and I was kind of rooting for Hendricks just personally, you know, beating cancer and all that.
Right.
It was a good story, and then, you know, obviously it didn't work out with him. He ended up getting, you know, let go later in the year, and then Chapman had one of the best relief seasons in the history of the Boston Red Sox, right up there with Koji's 2013 and Papelbon's 2006-07. I forget which year that was, one of those 2 years, but it was right up there. You know, 117 ERA, you know, 85 Ks, 32 saves. And now he's a top 10 reliever once again this year. Just another example of how things can change so quickly. But real quick, before I get into the next guy here, don't tell me that you're not in the Munoz. I literally just drafted Munoz like this afternoon in the Tout draft and hold. I just got him in the fourth round. So.
I think it's a great spot to get him. You know, I don't have a problem with that. There's always, I don't know what it is. You know, we have these biases, right? And there's always been something for me, like I've been waiting for like this next level Munoz, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like that for him to be like the clear number one capital C guy in the whole business. And it just, there's always something that, I don't know if it's just that I catch him at odd times or like I'm watching the game that he blows and I'm like, this guy's not even that good, which I know is wrong, obviously, right? I'm not going to say that. But I always do worry about those teams where I want, if I'm going to spend that high level pick, right? I mean, Munoz clearly has the skills, but what if Matt Brash takes 10 saves from him? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that's the stuff that always worries me and kind of, I don't want to say it keeps me up at night, but things that you wake up in the middle of the night and you think about like, okay, if I wanted Munoz there, that's great. But then you almost want to kind of take Brash later just to make sure you got a handcuff, I guess. It just worries me. You know, you just, the best guy in the bullpen is not always the guy that's getting the saves. And that's a thing that I learned from Doug Dennis many years ago. You know, like you have these guys that come in and they wipe out guys in the fifth and sixth inning, and then they're not getting the saves, but they're the best arm in the bullpen, you know? And for our purposes, having the best arm in the bullpen doesn't equate to much a lot of the time in fantasy sports, you know?
Yep. No, 100%. One last quick thing here on Cade Smith too, before we move past him. You know, something that's really intriguing about Smith, like obviously he could miss bats. He's got the really good bat missing stuff, you know, three offerings above a 32% whiff rate. Fastball is really good, but he doesn't walk anybody either. I mean, usually you see like these guys, like this Munoz, you know, 11% walk rate. Usually they're mostly, you know, in the higher walk rate range, but not Smith. He's been right around like 6% each of the last 2 years while having a K rate in the vicinity of 35%. So he feels pretty safe too. I mean, as safe as a reliever can be, but yeah, he's a guy I'd feel totally fine taking him as a top five guy. And if he was still there when I took Munoz, I absolutely would have taken him. But Smith went like five or six picks before it got back to me. So I'm buying Smith. I mean, he's a guy that he was always the one where you're like, oh, well, if something happens to Class A, you know, Smith could be an RP, you know, an RP1 for fantasy. And
absolutely.
Now we're seeing it. I mean, you got a taste of it last year with the 16 saves. Now you could probably double that with elite ratios, you know, pretty decent volume for a reliever. Yeah, I'm all in on Cade Smith. Next little grouping here of ADP, which will lead us into the next guy. We'll talk about who's been a pretty, you know, reliable guy for a long time, but last year had a little bit of a down season for him. That's Ryan Helsley, you know, formerly of St. Louis, now with the Baltimore Orioles. First up, I thought he was like 36. He's only 31. I'm not sure why I was so far off. He's one of those guys that feels like he's just been around forever.
Yeah, it does.
Thought he'd be like in his mid-30s, but he's only 31. But now joining the Baltimore Orioles, you know, they have Felix Bautista, who's, you know, out for the year again. But this ADP range here, we're still in the top 50, but you got like Bednar's right around 40, Williams 41, Chapman 42, Hader 52, and Ryan Helsley around 61. So he is the 10th reliever off the board this year for redraft leagues. You know, had a 49 save year in 2024 and still had 21 saves last year, but had a 450 ERA and a 154 WHIP. Yeah, so kind of a, you know, really down year for him after having three straight years under a 2.5 ERA. So what do you make of Helsley's 2025 season? I mean, I think people are still relatively in given the ADP, and now he's in a new home. But you think last year was just, you know, just one of those chalk up to being a bad year, and you still think he could be you know, a pretty good reliever here in 2026?
I absolutely think he can be a top reliever, and I like actually what you said about the ADP, because in some of the other NFBC, you know, I kind of keep the chart of all the NFBC and kind of track where these guys are going. In other NFBC leagues, he's going down closer to like pick 90, 91, and I'll take that discount if you want to give it to me, because I don't know if people remember this, but in 2024, he had 49 saves. On a decent St. Louis team. St. Louis was not nearly as good last year, and they're obviously going to be, you know, a work in progress this year. But he's going to a really good team, and I look at what he was doing and what happened, and, you know, there was a lot of talk in New York last year that he was tipping his pitches, and he got some feedback on that and was kind of working on, you know, how he was working through his pitches and his mix and whatnot. But the if you look under the hood, I think the signs are all there. You know, his ERA was 4.5 last year, which obviously is not something that we want. Excuse me. But the velocity was still there. He's good. This is one of the elite fastball guys in the game. Another guy with an elite slider. He's got a two-pitch mix that he uses. He's got a lot of great chase and whiff stuff that goes on with that. The K percentage was still 25% last year. Walk percentage was a little high for him compared to what he's used to. You know, his whip was like 1.54. But again, if you look under the hood and think a little bit more about, you know, ERA is such a flawed stat. We don't have to talk about that because everybody who's listening is going to know that going in. But if we look at like his xFIP, it was 3.79. Still not great, but three quarters of a run lower than what it was this past year. If we look at the strikeout rate is there. He was kind of victimized by home run balls last year, too. Yeah, they saw a huge spike in his home run percentage, and I think that probably is tied to that pitch tipping that he was working on. So it's pretty clear to me that Baltimore feels that he can be their capital C closer. I look at him, and I think, you know, 25, 30 saves is easily within reach. You know, the one thing that you kind of, you know, look at with Baltimore and you wonder is they have a tendency to kind of mix and match a little bit too. So they've also got Andrew Kittredge who maybe he gets four or five saves. They got Keegan Aiken who was really not bad in the role last year. He's not Helsley, but, you know, he could, you know, nickel and dime a couple of left-handed saves there at the end. So I think, you know, if you're looking at it and thinking, may he could get to 49 saves again, I don't think that's going to happen. But there's definitely a world where he gets 25 to 30 and his ERA is a much more usable three and the strikeout rate kind of comes up again. But take heed with Helsley, though, too. You know, he has not pitched a lot of innings over the course of time. So even the year that he had the 49 saves in 24, he only threw about 66 innings. And so he had a little bit of a suppressed strikeout total. So if you're looking at Cade Smith and Mason Miller and these guys that can get you 100 strikeouts, you might want to budget a little – you know, a lower number of strikeouts for Helsley. You know, if he gets to 65, 66 innings, 70 innings, you know, maybe you're looking at 80 strikeouts as opposed to 100. I like him as a closer. I think, you know, he's a top 10 guy for me at this point. But I understand why people might have some trepidation in looking at it. Just you got to be careful with what you're doing here and what you really think you're getting.
I'm glad that you said that you have him as a top 10 guy. I was going to ask you if you would feel okay, you know, coming out of a draft and having Helsley as your RP1. So it seems like you are then.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, again, I think, like I said earlier, I don't think you need as many. I don't think you need 80 saves anymore to be competitive in the, you know, in the statistics in most leagues. You need to get a guy that's going to get the bulk of that team's chances and go from there. And Baltimore had a bad year last year. They should improve this year. They should have a demonic offense if it all lines up the right way. And so I like the idea that Helsley's walking into a very good situation there.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned this too. Like, I think the key for him is getting that fastball back. You know, obviously velocity has been, you know, right there, nearly 100 miles an hour. But that four-seamer went from being a positive 3-run value pitch to a negative 15 last year with a 422 batting average again. So it's just like,
this is just crazy numbers, right? I mean, you just can't, that's unsustainable. There's going to be some regression back to the mean, and he's going to be okay. You know,
Absolutely. I 100% agree. And part of it, like, look at the heat maps, like 2024, he was more up in the zone with it. You know, 2025, you saw that he was kind of down more over the heart, even more down, throwing it kind of lower third part of the zone, kind of like right where a lot of hitters like to get that swing path nowadays. So I think a little bit of that played into it. But yeah, I'm definitely, you know, buying a bounce back here. I'm especially with relievers, I'm really big on track record and kind of trusting that a little more than I would trust like a bad year. But yeah, you can't ignore the fact that Helsley was, you know, not great last year, but you also got to remember, like, you might, you know, the 49 saves the year before that, just, you know, a lot of years, a low, you know, of a 3 ERA or lower, you know, really 2022 through 2024, he was one of the better relievers in all of baseball. And yeah, not a guy that gives you a super, you know, high, you know, strikeout rate, but a guy that you can trust getting you those saves and usually give you some good ratios and, you know, a decent enough strikeout rate. So yeah, I'm definitely on board with a Helsley bounce back for sure. Just have him all of his blown saves be against my Red Sox when
we play. Exactly, exactly.
That's don't you love that when it's like, you know, like we do all the fantasy stuff, but we also have our own teams that we root for, and it's like your favorite team is facing off against, you know, one of your top, you know, fantasy players. You're like, all right, I want I want Jose Ramirez to go 3-for-4 with 2 bombs, but I want the Red Sox to win 4-2 or something like that.
Right, exactly. Exactly. But unfortunately, I'm a White Sox fan, so I never expect to win. So I just always root for my fantasy guy. Make sure he gets the save for me that night.
Absolutely. There you go. But let's go right over to somebody in the American League Central, to the Kansas City Royals, and a reliever that I'm seeing a lot of people, more people down on than high on this year, and that's Carlos Estevez. His ADP right now, he's going off the board as the 12th reliever, right around pick 78 in NFBC DCs. Raisel Iglesias is right ahead of him. You know, he's one of the more steady guys in baseball over the years at 11. But Estevez is a guy that I'm seeing a lot of people be like, no, I'm out. Just don't want anything to do with him. I kind of can see, like, you look at his Savant page, and it's not like super intriguing. Like, there's not, like, he has a really low chase rate, a really low whiff rate. He's never really been a big K rate guy. Last year was running a 20% K rate, though. He's had an ERA of 2.46 on the dot each of the last 2 years. Like, he doesn't get ground balls. They're moving in the fences in Kansas City, which is great because I got some shares of Bobby Witt, some, you know, Michael Garcia, some Vinny P. So I love it on that regard. You know, Salvi Perez. But for a guy like Estevez, who does not get ground balls and gives up a lot of contact in the air, that doesn't usually bode well for guys like that. So where are you at on Estevez here, Mike?
It's a huge risk, right? I mean, I think when you look at Estevez, there are a lot of people that are down on him, as you point out, and for reasons that I can fully understand. You have to have sort of a special build to be able to have Estevez, I think, on your roster. I mean, you know, he does have 99 saves the last 3 years. And so while a lot of people want to poo-poo the other stats that go along with that, at the end of the day, he's converting saves. And the Royals are going to – I think the Royals are going to be pretty good. I don't know how many people share that opinion, but in kind of looking at what they've done with the small market approach that they have this year, I think their bullpen's actually going to be pretty decent. And I know there's a lot of people that think that Estevez could give way to Lucas Erceg and that Erceg could be kind of a sleeper, somebody we might talk about in a little bit. But here's the thing. You have to get saves. And we have a term that we've used. Michael Simeone used the term back in the day, painful saves. These are pain. Yep. These are painful saves. These are saves that you might get, but he might give up three runs and blow up your ratios for the week. You know, I think if you know what you're getting, and if you're okay with getting 30 saves with a 4 ERA and a low strikeout rate, meaning like you drafted Skubal and Skeens or something, and you have some monster rotation that can kind of stomach the idea of having the poor ratios to get the saves, I think that's okay. But I'm avoiding Estevez largely, not because I don't think he's good at getting saves, but I just don't see any type of build that I can make that I'm comfortable with where I see him as my number one closer, especially with the ratios and the low strikeouts for me.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, and you know, especially in redraft, he's going out the board. Like, he's basically going to be your RP1 right at the end of the RP1 and beginning of the RP2 range. And I don't know. I just don't feel comfortable with moving the fences in, his lack of swing and miss stuff. But you made a good point. I mean, this kind of goes back to the track record thing, too. He does have 99 saves over the last 3 years, which I just pulled it up real quick. That's second most in all of baseball. And technically first most, if you take away the guy that was ahead of him, who's now not even pitching anymore, that was Class A.
Correct.
But 115. This is actually a pretty fun and random top 10. So you get Class A is 115 over the last 3 years. Estevez 99. Iglesias 96. Hader 95. And you get Kyle Finnegan, fifth, with 90. Yep. And then Bednar, Kenley Jansen, who's closing in on 500 saves for his career. Ryan Helsley is eighth. Yoan Duran, ninth. And Camilo Doval, 10th. And Duval's at 78. So, yeah, he's number two in saves over the last 3 years. He's only blown 15, so that's not a terrible amount. And he's got an ERA under 3 during that time frame. So,
yeah, I mean, think about it, right? You could draft Estevez with a high pick, or you could draft Kenley Jansen 200 picks later and get essentially the same guy with a better ratio, you know?
Yeah. You know, Kenley's kind of turning in. I've used this expression a few times lately, but, you know, Kenley Jansen is almost like the my Tony Gonzalez of relievers. Like, he's old and he's like, all right, his best years are behind him, but he's still cranking out productive seasons. Kind of like,
yeah, he's still good. Yeah.
When Tony Gonzalez was like in the last few years of his career, like, all right, he's not, you know, the number one dude anymore, but he's still giving me 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns or something like
exactly,
that.
Exactly. Right. Still very usable.
Yeah, Kenley's still giving you 30-some-odd saves a year. I mean, Kenley has had, you know, I don't know how many straight years of just like 25-plus saves, but it's ridiculous. I'm just going to pull it up real quick because I was looking at it like a week or two ago, just looking at the consistency of him over the years, going from the Dodgers and a couple years, you know, here in Boston, the 1 year in Atlanta with the Angels. So he's kind of bounced around a little bit lately now with the Tigers, but his save total is starting last year and going back, 29, 27, 29, 41, 38, 11 in the shortened season, 33, 38, 41, 47, 36, 44, 28, 25. That was back in 2012, and then he wasn't a closer the first 2 years of his career. So
right, in an ERA that's never been over 3.7.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
consistency.
Whips that are decent. Like, you just know what you're going to get. Just, you know, pencil it in. Now, we say that every year, right? Now he's 38. We're thinking, well, the slope will be slippery when it becomes slippery, right? And but, you know, he's been throwing one pitch for the last 5 or 6 years. He throws it 88% of the time, and it's still working. So
100%. I mean, it's almost like the old, you know, Mariano Rivera. Like, you know it's coming, but the fact that he just does a great job at locating it and kind of like, you know, mixing up and going, you know, going kind of like where he goes in with it, and then he goes outside corner with it, and he goes like down at the knees with it. He kind of keeps you guessing where it's, yeah, it's like one pitch, but that he just kind of throws it all over, you know, a few different spots, or it kind of looks like, you know, a few different pitches. But
and I knew a guy who faced him in the minor leagues who said that it was like, it's like hitting a bowling ball. Because can you imagine the heaviness of it, and that you can't, as a hitter, you can't really do much with it.
Yeah, so it's just when he's running it in on the hands, you know, or like kind of like right at the belt, you swing right over it or just pound it right into the ground for, you know,
exactly
ground out the second base. Yeah. I enjoyed Jansen in his 2 years here in Boston. You know, he was, you know, he was solid. Again, he had, you know, back-to-back years around close to 30 saves with us. He had he loaded him at threes. Wasn't like studly, but just a good 2 years here. And I fully expect him to have another good year here in Detroit in 2026. So
they do too. They wouldn't have brought him in if they didn't feel that way. They have some interesting options there too, but there's no doubt in my mind that Kenley is going to be the closer, not Vester Finnegan.
Oh yeah. They got a pretty decent bullpen there this year. And
they sure do. They sure do.
Now that, you know, looks like they're holding on to Skubal, which I kind of thought was the case all along, and adding Framber, and they got a pretty solid offense there. They'll be adding Kevin McGonigal at some point this year too. Detroit could make some noise this year.
Absolutely.
They could be a team that surprises, and maybe they're in the ALCS or something like that 7 months from now. But let's move on here to the next player on the list here. Daniel Palencia, you know, kind of emerged last year. The Cubs were kind of cycling through a bunch of guys. They couldn't find any consistency in the eighth, ninth innings, you know, for that team. But then Palencia emerged and became that guy last year. 54 outings, 2.91 ERA, 1.14 WHIP, got 22 saves locked in, 61 strikeouts. That's a 28.5% strikeout rate. And now he's going off the board as, you know, mid to high end RP2. He is the 16th reliever off the board, going around pick 105 in NFBC drafts, right between, or right actually right ahead of Kenley Jansen, who's right behind him, and then right behind Emilio Pagan with Cincinnati, who I actually kind of like a decent amount this year as well. But Palencia, one of the, you know, he's not like super young, he's 26, but one of the young cats in terms of like all these elite guys that are mostly like, you know, upper 20s. Low to mid 30s, so he's one of like the newer guys on the block here, but pretty intriguing stuff. I mean, obviously kind of emerging in that role last year after kind of being off the map previously. He had a, you know, 6.14 ERA the year before that, but, you know, a lot of, you know, decent metrics there. Limits hard contact, you know, pretty well. Limits barrels well, I should say. They give up a lot of barrels, primarily four-seam slider guy, four-seamer a lot, over 70% of the time. It's a pretty good one. Slider's pretty good as well, so are you buying, you know, kind of what you saw from Palencia last year, and do you think he can have a good first full year as a everyday closer or a full time closer, I should say?
I'm probably one of the few people that you will find in our industry that's not super stoked about Palencia, and it's not because he's not good, and it's not because he doesn't have really nice stuff. I agree with everything that you were saying. The thing that concerns me is this, and if people want to come at me with this, I totally am willing to have a conversation about it and we'll be civil. I worry that, you know, the last time we saw him in the playoffs, he was pitching in the fifth inning. And I know that those were must-win games for the Cubs, and it didn't end up working out the way that they wanted it to. I thought it said a lot about the way Council used his bullpen, that he was not really afraid last year to use anybody at any time. And the Cubs have sort of rebuilt their bullpen this year again in that same image. You know, they gave Hunter Harvey $8 million, I think. Maybe it was six, but, you know, they're looking to see if they can kind of catch that lightning in a bottle like they did again last year. And so my worry is that while Palencia is probably the best arm in their bullpen, does he end up having a situation like what happened with Munoz and Brash in Seattle a few years ago, where the saves are kind of sprinkled around three or four other guys? Phil Maton is there. Hunter Harvey is there. They've got options that they can look at besides Palencia. And really, you know, when you look at his ratios and stuff like that, to me, there's a little bit of room for concern there. You know, I look at the Statcast the same way that you do, and I noticed that, you know, he gave up a lot of hard contact last year. He doesn't have a lot of great chase on his stuff either, even though the strikeout rate was over 28%. I wonder if some of this, you know, if there's a little bit of regression here. He's also had really high walk rates in the past, which he was able to control last year, but in limited sample sizes in the past, he had an 11.8% walk percentage in 23. And that skyrocketed to 17.4 in 24. He cut that to 7.4 last year. But if I really want that top line closer, and a lot of people seem to be drafting him as a, number one, like slash number two, like you were saying. If he's your number two guy, I think that's great. But if you're thinking that you're getting a capital C closer, like we like to say, number one guy, 35 plus saves, I think you might be in for a little bit of a letdown. And I would counsel you against putting all your eggs in the Palencia basket. I know I listen to a lot of shows and there's a lot of people that are really into Palencia, and I get that. But I think, you know, it's a little bit of wish casting. There's some signs here that maybe if you're taking him as your number one guy, that you might not get the save total that you were really hoping to get. And that's my opinion, and I will own that.
Yeah, I'm pretty – I don't know. He's a difficult one for me. I kind of like him, but – you know, I'm kind of with you in some regard that there's some concerns here for sure. Like, you look at the profile, and while the barrel rate is super low, like I mentioned, you know, only 4.4% barrel rate allowed, which is pretty good. He's allowed a 45% or higher hard hit rate each of his 3 years in the majors, 48.5% last year. Though it was good, like you mentioned, he dropped that walk rate a good bit last year down to 7.5%, which is much more manageable than 17.5%. But yeah, I just. He's a guy where I'd be okay with him as my RP2. But if you're waiting in kind of you want to go, you know, more hitting or starting pitching early and you kind of want to wait and you're like, oh, yeah, Palencia will be my RP1. Yeah, that's kind of risky. I'm 100% there with you on that one. RP2, I'm okay with. So I think he'll get 25, 30 saves this year. Probably, you know, low to mid 3 ERA, a little bit over a K per inning. So I think he'll be fine. But yeah, mm-hmm. I don't really see him kind of like taking that next step and all of a sudden he's a top 10 guy or anything like that. I just don't see it. And like you mentioned, they added some guys. They added four guys to their bullpen this year, three of which actually were on Texas last year, oddly enough. You know, Mayton, Webb, and Hobie Millender are all in Texas, and then they added Hunter Harvey from Kansas City as well. So a lot of new faces in that bullpen, a lot of guys that have been around a bit. There's a lot of experienced veterans in that bullpen. You add in Caleb Thibar, who's 39 years old as well. So a lot of guys that have been on the block a time or two. So, yeah, I definitely share some of your concerns there with Palencia.
Now watch him be the guy that gets 45 saves.
I know. Well, yeah, just, that would just be – I mean, it wouldn't surprise me, to be honest with you. I'm like – I've stopped being surprised by anything to do with relievers. Like, oh, this guy that we didn't think was good all of a sudden is, you know, an RP1, or guys that we think are rock solid all of a sudden. Like, all of a sudden, like, you know, Helsley goes from being rock solid to having a 4-5 ERA. It's right. It's like nothing surprises me anymore with relievers, honestly. But next up here, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, position battles going on this year in the bullpen. And we'll get to more of them later on. But the one I wanted to like talk about separately was Milwaukee, with Trevor Megill and Abner Uribe. Both are, you know, been really good options, you know, over the years, and both have had some save, you know, experience in that closer role. You know, last year, you know, 30 saves for Megill, 249 ERA, 272 ERA a year before that with 21 saves. Though he's been under 50 innings each of the last 2 years, but, you know, ratios have been there. You know, pretty good strikeout rate, keeps the walk rate in check. Now, he's been a guy that over the last 3 years has become, you know, pretty consistent. You know, and Abner Uribe, you know, he's been a guy that kind of emerged, you know, a year or two ago. And one of the more, I think, electric arms in all mm-hmm. of baseball, for sure. And last year had a really good year. You look at his Savant page. I mean, Megill's Savant page looks good. Uribe's looks really good. There's mm-hmm. a lot of red on that. But he emerged a few years ago. Then he had a down year in 2024. Only had 14 outings. Last year in 75 outings, racked up 7 saves, 1.67 ERA, 1.04 WHIP, 9% walk rate and a 30% strikeout rate. So, you know, how do you see this battle going? And like, who do you think is the guy? Who would you rather, you know, attach yourself to, you know, moving forward this year and beyond, Megill or Uribe?
Well, you know, it's been crazy watching the ADP because they're like right next to each other. Yeah. It seems like nobody can really make up their mind about how they think this is going to go. And in my opinion, when you can't make up your mind about how something's going to go, you probably should go elsewhere. But to your point, these are two really high line arms that are just wonderful guys to have in a bullpen in real life. You know, I mean, Megill's got a little bit more experience, and I think that's probably what ends up winning the day, that, you know, he's 32. And if they decide to move somebody, you know, I don't know if anybody else is looking at it, but Milwaukee could really use a third baseman. I don't know if they're even looking on the market for that, but, you know, I could see them being in a position. They've done it before. They did it with Devin Williams. They did it with Josh Hader, where they trade one of those top guys and get something for them that's really useful. Yeah. I think if they do that, if McGill's healthy, I think McGill starts the year with the job. But Uribe, to your point, is absolutely electric and has shown that he can pitch in just about any role in that bullpen. The Brewers' bullpen, though, is a really interesting deep dive if you take a look at it. You can really get lost in it. You know, they just acquired Angel Zerpa from Kansas City. They really, really like him. There's been some talk that they might try him in the rotation. But, you know, they gave up Isaac Collins for him another pitcher, too. And I can't – the name escapes me right now. But they've got Aaron Ashby. They've got D.L. Hall. They've got Zerpa in that bullpen. Jared Koenig is another great weapon that they have there. And they got, like, five lefties where nobody has, like, more than two, right? So it's pretty wild to kind of look at it. But Uribe is a guy that, you know, if you're in a saves and holds league, he led the entire world in holds last year with 37, even though he spent about a third of the year as closer. So that tells you a little bit about how he's used and how powerful he is. They both will be considered to be great weapons, but you're probably going to see some split on the saves there. You know, if McGill's healthy, I could see it being like he gets like 67% of the saves, and then Uribe gets a third of those, you know. So McGill maybe gets 20, you know, 18. Uribe ends up with 10 or 12. They're both going to be guys that are worth owning because they can – or rostering, I should say, just because they're both really dynamic. But at the same time, you got to temper your expectations. Now, injuries have a tendency to sort things out a little bit, or a trade could sort that out too. So we'll have to see what happens here in spring training. But if I had to bet, I would guess that Uribe would be a multiple-inning stopper to start the year, and McGill would be the closer. That's if they don't end up trading McGill. McGill's another one of those guys, like, it's hard to see him in another position besides closer, and Uribe has multiple uses. So I could see that kind of being the case until they decide what they're going to do with that bullpen.
Yeah, Milwaukee always marches to the beat of their own drum, and usually it works out. Like, they'll make, like you mentioned, they'll make these moves where we're like, what are they doing? Mm-hmm. Then they always, they're, oh, there's the division champs again, and, you know, a high seed in the postseason. So, you know, they haven't won the World Series, but, you know, definitely they always seem to make things work, even if it doesn't make sense at the time. But I'm right there with you. I do think, in terms of looking at just for saves, yeah, I do feel like it's more like a two-thirds, one-third split in favor of McGill, which is kind of funny because a lot of the projections I've seen have it almost flip-flopped, like, you mm-hmm. know, more so two-thirds to Uribe. You know, the one thing, and you mentioned just a little bit too, you know, the situational thing, Uribe gets a lot of ground balls. He's sinker slider. Mm-hmm. Now that sinker, he's had a ground ball rate above 50% each of his 3 years in the majors. So I could totally see, you know, in Milwaukee up by one, it's the seventh inning, you know, two men on, or even like bases loaded, one out. They're like, all right, we need a double play ball. We need a mm-hmm. ball on the ground. Let's mm-hmm. bring in Uribe, get that, you know, try to get that double play. Then he comes back out for the eighth after that or something like that. So I could 100% see something like that, you know, given his ground ball prowess and ability to just strike guys out too. So that slider, absolutely filthy. Just seeing like the two distinct movements of the sinker and the slider. I mean, I'm sure, like, you know, Rob Freeman, Pitching Ninja, probably has like an overlay of how they're both like right there, then they just completely take off opposite directions. So
They're both nasty. And they have such different approaches. You know, I go to Milwaukee fairly frequently and see those guys. And Uribe is like he's this lithe, you know, skinny guy who's just got a whip. And then you got McGill, who's like 6'9", you know, like just coming downhill. Like, it's just absolutely fun to watch at the end of games there.
Yeah, McGill is built like an NFL tight end or like an NBA power forward or something like that. He's built like Travis Kelce or something like that. So, and Uribe is pretty tall too, isn't he? What's Uribe? 6'3", fairly tall.
Yeah, he's about 6'3", but he looks like he weighs 150 pounds when you see him from far away.
I'm sure, yeah.
And McGill,
especially next to McGill.
Yeah, McGill's upwards of probably 275, 280, I would say. So, big dude.
Yeah, and they both throw very hard. I mean, McGill's averaging, he's averaging 99 on his fastball. I mean, he's fastball knuckle curve, and that knuckle curve is absolutely filthy as well. And then Uribe, you know, sinker, slider, and that sinker's averaging 99. So two guys that just come in throwing straight up gas, but in very different ways. You know, four seamer, then that hammer curveball from McGill, sinker, slider going east to west. with Uribe. So just completely different, you know, different looks. Like if they're coming in back to back in the eighth and the ninth, just completely different looks for those hitters. So
for sure,
that's gonna be probably one of the better 8-9 in baseball. I haven't like looked at it and compared, but you got to imagine that's like a top five or so.
Absolutely, yeah,
8-9 combination there in Milwaukee. So
for sure, for sure.
They are in good hands in Milwaukee, but moving on here down to Atlanta, you know, a guy that was one of the kind of better relievers and one of the higher saves guys in baseball, Robert Suarez. Now he's going to be, you know, at least to start the year, setting up for Raisel Iglesias, who's been, you know, rock solid as well. You know, Suarez coming off back-to-back years above 35 saves, 36 in 2024, 40 last year, ERA under 3. Both the years, you know, over a strikeout per inning last year. Not a huge K rate guy, but it did tick up to 28% last year, which is pretty solid. Walk rate around 6% each of the last 2 years as well. But now he goes into a much different situation where, you know, he was the guy, like the guy alone the last 2 years in San Diego. And now, you know, maybe he's a guy that's only getting 5-10 saves this year, assuming Iglesias stays healthy. But he's still getting drafted, you know, fairly high for, you know, a non closer, you know, so to speak. He's a 24th guy off the board, right around pick 200. He's kind of like in a spot by himself, a pocket by himself in ADP. Nobody really around him for a couple rounds either way. But, you know, obviously in saves holds formats, he's still like one of the top guys because he'll probably get like, you know, assuming, let's say Iglesias stays healthy, we're say Suarez probably gets around maybe 8 to 10 saves, but he's going to get a ton of holds as well. I think Atlanta's going to be pretty good this year. I think they're going to bounce back and, you know, be back to being, you know, pretty good team, though they're already, you know, injury city there in their rotation with Schwellenbach and Waldrop going down with loose bodies in their elbow, which I still don't know what the hell that means. That doesn't sound fun. Like, loose bodies. It's like, I just don't, that just sounds gross.
I know.
I think Atlanta will be good. So there'll be plenty of opportunities there for those two guys. So, yeah, how are you valuing Robert Suarez this year?
I think you're right on target with what you said. You know, Iglesias is one of the top closers in the game over the last 10 years. He's going to retain that job. He is in the last year of a contract, you know, and so if Atlanta is not good, I agree with your assertion. I think they're going to be better than they were and compete for a playoff spot all year. But if they're not, you know, they could move Iglesias and Suarez could move into a top role. The interesting thing for me about Suarez that I don't fully understand is that despite the velocity, he's not a real big strikeout guy. And so I'm not sure why people are drafting him where they're drafting him, other than that they think that maybe Iglesias has become trade bait and Suarez kind of swoops in and takes that job. It's not like you're going to get, you know, Suarez is going to come in and pitch two innings and get five strikeouts. That's really kind of not what he does, you know. He's a little bit more reliant on subterfuge and not really big on the, you know, his K rate is good. Don't get me wrong, but I'm just saying he's not going to come in and post those eye popping Cade Smith or Mason Miller type of strikeout numbers that you get. He's also 34 years old. So I, you know, it's not like he's a young guy that's going to, you know, work his way up into a position a la Abner Uribe, who we were just talking about. You know, I'm kind of staying off of Suarez just because I'm uncertain of what his role is, even though I know he's got really good skills.
Yeah, I mean, it's format dependent. I mean, like I said, I think he's still like my home keeper league with my buddies from a lot of which are from high school. You know, we do saves holds, even though I've tried to change that because I think it devalues relievers. But, you know, he's still, I think, a top 10 guy in a saves holds format or at least in that discussion. But yeah, in saves only, I mean, if he's only getting 8 or 10 saves, yeah, he'll probably still give you some decent ratios and a decent enough K rate. But is 8 to 10 saves enough to warrant, you know, being on like especially people listening that are just playing in like a, you know, a 12-team Yahoo league where, you know, is he worth it there? Like maybe as an RP3. I mean, I could see like if you get two guys as your top two that you really feel good about, like, all right, these guys are gonna give me 30 plus saves, I'm fine there, and you want to like, take a chance on Iglesias, like, well, maybe he, you know, Iglesias gets hurt and you want to take a chance on Suarez. I could see that as like an upside play, you know, RP3. But, yeah, it's really all very dependent format with Suarez for sure.
Absolutely.
He's definitely, you know, obviously rock solid, but, you know, the role is everything. And Iglesias has earned the right to really stay in that role after having, you know, over 30 saves he had 29 last year, so close enough, but basically 30 saves in each of the last 3 years. And, you know, definitely had some years before that. He's up to 253 career saves. So he's starting to climb the leaderboard here. So maybe he gets up to like 400 or something in his
career. Absolutely can. And I think that's, you know, that's another thing that we talk about as well. You know, we're always looking for the sexy new thing in fantasy baseball, right? And you have guys like Raisel Iglesias that, you know, he's going to have a couple of bumps and bruises along the way. He might be out of the job for a week or two. He always recovers. He always ends up being a guy that's up there with saves at the end of the season. I still think he's pretty reliable even at age 36.
Yeah, 100%. The old guys, I'd be fine just going with like Iglesias and Jansen as my top two. I mean, they're both older.
That'll be awesome.
They're both like, you know, mid to upper 30s, but hey, they'll give me like 70, 75 saves. I am all for it, for sure.
Amen. Amen to that.
All right, so we already talked about one closer battle per se in Milwaukee, but there's, you know, a handful more here across baseball. Really six more. Not quite as sexy as the Milwaukee battle, but still we have to figure out who the heck is going to get the saves here. So I feel like there's six teams here, three in each league. We got in the American League, the Athletics, the Angels, and the Rays. National League, the D-backs, the Cardinals, and the Nationals. Mm-hmm. We can just go team by team here, you know, list the options, and a two-parter. Who do you think wins the job, and are they worth targeting? So we'll start with the Athletics here, who are really exciting on paper offensively. They're still kind of trying to figure out the whole pitching thing, both in the rotation and the bullpen. But they're going into the year, you know, with a trio, probably looking at Hogan Harris, a lefty, Justin Sterner, and Mark Leiter Jr., both righties. So who do you think gets the job, and are you even intrigued by them in fantasy?
Yeah, the one guy that I'm really intrigued by here is Sterner. We've talked about him before. I've talked about him with other people in the industry. Hogan Harris did an admirable job for them last year down the stretch and kind of held the fort down, but I think he's better used as a seventh or eighth inning guy. They also signed Mark Leiter Jr., who has some experience there, but probably better served as a seventh or eighth inning guy. Sterner is a guy that if you're looking for a late dart throw in deeper leagues, he'd be a guy that I would be really interested in. And he's not really been somebody that they've leaned on super heavily over the course of time. But he's a veteran. You know, he's 29 years old. He's not a kid. If you pull up his stat cast and look at it, you're going to like it. Yeah. You know, he's got a really good chase percentage. He's got a really good whiff percentage. You know, he features, you know, he's got a three-pitch mix, I would say, you know, with what he's doing there with the fastball. And looking at a couple other things, you know, with a cutter that he throws as well. And then he's added in a sweeper that actually was fairly effective last year. He's not a super high velo guy, but he's got really good placement and location. So Sterner would be a guy that I have kind of circled for later in drafts that I think could be a dark horse candidate to get saves for the Athletics.
Yeah, no, that's the one I was looking at too, because, you know, I don't think it's going to be Hogan here. I mean, he'll probably get some save ops, sure, but, you know, he's only – you know, one of two lefties in that bullpen. We talked about who was the bullpen that had five of them? Milwaukee had five lefties.
Right.
The Athletics have two lefties in Hogan Harris and Brady Bezo. So, and, you know, the only real one of note there is Hogan Harris. So I could see him absolutely coming in seventh inning, eighth inning, whatever, you know, a couple of tough lefties coming up and being used that way a good bit of the season. So that kind of leaves with Sterner and Leiter. And I like Leiter a little bit too. I'm semi intrigued there, but yeah, you said it very well. Like the Samant page for Sterner, pretty impressive. Not many guys you'll see that are above 30%, both in chase and whiff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, limits hard contact fairly well. Doesn't walk a ton of guys. You know, it was pretty good last year. 3.19 ERA in 65 innings, 1.05 WHIP. Yeah, I could see him getting like 15 to 18 saves with a low 3 ERA and around a K per inning. And I think that could be pretty useful. Yeah, RP3 territory. I'm kind of okay with that for sure. Next team up here, we're going to the Angels, who are always kind of a mess, it seems like. but this year, they got a few decent options, all guys that have been around the block a time or two here. Really four guys. I mean, Ross Russo has only three guys with the CL in the role, but they also got Jordan Romano, who's probably pitching middle of the leaf. You know, obviously he's had a lot of save opportunities over the years, but the three that are maybe in the mix here are Robert Stevenson, Drew Pomeranz, and Kirby Yates. You know, then they added, you know, half their bullpen over the last few months. They added Pomeranz, Yates, and Romano back in December, and also got Brent Suter a couple weeks ago here in February from Cincinnati, and they've had Stevenson here for a couple years now. So who do you think is going to be here? Stevenson, Pomeranz, Yates, maybe even Romano, and are you interested in them in fantasy?
Boy, it's a really tough question you ask, and I know that I have to answer these questions. They're not always going to be softballs. You know, they have actually paid Stevenson to be the closer, right? And he's not been healthy. You know, he was out all of 24. He only pitched in 12 games last year. He did look pretty good in those 12 games that he was back in last year. He's 32. There's no reason for them to kind of, you know, not use him in that role. Pomeranz is an older lefty, not really suited to a closer role, I don't think, even though he'll probably get a handful of saves. Kirby Yates is the old warhorse. You know, he's been there for a long time. In the game, he did not have a great season last year. You know, his ERA was up over 5. Looks like he might be kind of sliding his way into a middle relief role. I don't know that he's going to be a closer anymore, although nothing would surprise me. Romano, you know, was so hurt last year and really lost when you saw him pitch. You know, you kind of felt bad for the guy. I would love for him to see him kind of climb that mountain again and be really good. The question that I have here is, why are they not having Reed Detmer stay in the bullpen? And
good question.
I thought he was really good in that role last year, and I kept telling people, I'm like, this guy could close. He's got the stuff to be able to do it. Now all of a sudden he's back in the rotation, but so is Alek Manoah. So I don't know what that really says about their rotation at this point. You know, Detmers could find himself back in the bullpen. If I had to choose one, if you told me, Mike, you got to take one of these guys, Stevenson would be my spec, even though he's often hurt. He's got great stuff. If he's healthy, I think he's a 15 to 20 save guy for them this year.
Yeah, that's absolutely the one I was going with, too. And you look at his last healthy year in 2024, he was really good. You know, that year he had 2023, as he missed all of 2024 and almost all of 2025. But he had a 3.10 ERA, 0.88 whip that year, 77 Ks and 52 in a third innings. It's a 38% strikeout rate. You know, walk rate's always been pretty solid with him as well. But you mentioned it, he has not a lot of time on the mound the last couple of years, and he has 3 career saves, so not a lot of experience mm-hmm. in the role, but I think he's the best arm. But yeah, the Angels build is just really weird. Like, Mike, if I had told you, like, back in the early, like, when the offseason began, so before they made that trade for Rodriguez, that 3/5 of their rotation in 2026 was going to be Grayson Rodriguez, who they ended up trading for, moving Reed Detmers back into the rotation, and then getting Alek Manoah, you know, to go along with Kikuchi and Soriano. You probably look at me like I had 3 heads, but that's where we're at with the Angels right now.
Right.
But, yeah, bullpen-wise, I think Stevenson a lot. And similar to like what I said with Hogan Harris, where, you know, Pomeranz is one of 2 lefties in that bullpen, and he's the best lefty in that bullpen. So I think he'll be situationally used a lot. And then, yeah, Yates and Romano just aren't as good as Stevenson. So, yeah, I definitely think it comes down to him, and I'd be fine with him as my RP3. I think he's actually, again, you mentioned it, if he can stay healthy, that's the big thing. But good amount of upside there as an RP3, but a lot of risk too, obviously.
For sure.
Yeah. Now going over to Tampa Bay, Pete Fairbanks is gone. He's now with the Miami Marlins, so he didn't really travel too far. He's still in the state of Florida, but now we got a little bit of a battle here in Tampa Bay. We have Edward Nieto, Griffin Jacks, maybe a little bit of Garrett Clevenger. I think probably more so the first two names there, both of which have had some closing experience over the last handful of years. So who do you think is going to be here between Nieto and Griffin Jacks?
It's funny because, you know, a lot of people always will stay away from Tampa, but Tampa's actually been a pretty good place to get closers over the last few years, you know. Yeah. Jesus Colomé was there for a while, or no, Alex Colomé, I should say, I'm sorry, and then you had Fairbanks. Of this mix, I think there's a lot of trade rumor going around Clevenger and that they would like to move him. He's the only lefty in that bullpen right now. He's very good at what he does. I don't know that he's a closer, even though he had a couple saves last year. Jax is the guy that I'm interested in by far the most. His talent is tantalizing. Minnesota could never decide what his role was, if he was a starter, if he was a middle inning guy, if he was a closer. Then, you know, obviously, you know, they have a stud there that did have a stud there for a while that, you know, he couldn't get past that role. I think Yusetta is best used as a multiple inning weapon, and I think that they would really like to see Jax take that job and run with it. I've always been really high on Jax. It's probably something that I should be checking a little bit more on and check myself on, but I think if he got the job straight out, this is a guy that's got the talent to join the top 10 conversation in closers in the game. Now, will that actually happen? Obviously, I have no way of knowing that, but where Jax is going and what I think he can bring to the table, I think he would be a dynamic closer and be one of the very best if he's given the opportunity to do it, if they would just leave him alone.
Yeah, I like, honestly, I like both these guys, Mike. Like, I like both Yusetta and Jax a good bit here, and I think they're both within, for a call correctly, when we pull up the ADP here, I think they're both in the top 30 in reliever ADP. Yusetta's 27th at 239, and they had Jax 23rd at 158. So, yeah, I think people are leaning Jax here. This is ADP is about 80 spots higher or so. But I like both these arms. I think they both have a lot of upside. You look at, you know, chase, whiff rate, K rates. They're all both really high. I mean, Jax is 98th percentile in all three of those. Yeah, Yusetta, 93rd percentile or higher on all three of those as well.
Right, right.
So I think both these guys, excuse me, could be, you know, RP2 values if given the chance. But I do think I lean, you know, more towards, I think more like a two-thirds, one-third thing here with Jax and Yusetta. Like I can see Jax in like 18 to 22 saves and Yusetta more like in that 10, 11, 12 range. But like you mentioned, Tampa Bay, you know, though they might, you know, not look great on paper right now, and they might be the, you know, fifth best team in a loaded AL East, they're still gonna get you some saves. Like,
yeah, they always compete. They always compete. They always find a way, and that's gonna be a really interesting bullpen. I mean, Jax had a bad year last year and did 35% strikeout percentage. I mean, it's just absurd.
I mean, he had over 95 saves each of the last 2 years. You know, I'm actually gonna pull up here. He's gonna be up there in reliever strikeouts. Last 2 years. I'm over the last 3 years now. I got to move it to last 2 years. He's fifth in strikeouts over the last 2 years for relievers behind Brian Abreu had the most at 208, Anthony Miller 208, Keith Smith 207, and Jeremiah Estrada. Look at him sitting there fourth at 202. And then you get Chapman, Diaz, Hader, Luke Weaver, and Hoffman running up that top 10. But yeah, I like both guys. I'd be fine with either as my RP3, to be honest with you. But I agree, I do lean a little more towards Griffin Jax there. But both very, very fun arms. Going over to the three National League teams here, Arizona. I mean, last year it was looking like, oh, we got A.J. Puck and Justin Martinez, and now both of them are basically out for the year or most of it. So we're looking at, you know, looking either Kevin Ginkle or Paul Sewald, both of which have had a little bit of experience here and there. You know, Sewald came over from Detroit this offseason via free agency. Ginkle has been in the system for a decade now. He was drafted way back in 2016, which is kind of hard to believe. But, you know, who do you like here between Kevin Ginkle and Paul Sewald here, Mike?
I would choose neither at this point. I don't know that either one of them are any good. I mean, they've really wanted Ginkle to take this job for a long time, and he's never really been able to do it. There is some news there, you know. Puck is said to be ahead of schedule, and I know that that's, you know, it's February, so, you know, who knows if that's really true or not, but you know, there's some talk that he might be back in May, which I think would be pretty aggressive.
All right.
But, you know, it might not be a total loss here in terms of looking at that, but there is a guy here that doesn't get any mention in here that could be of interest, and it's a guy that they got in the Blaze Alexander trade, Cade Stroud. Cade Stroud looks like he's going to be like a setup guy for them, but he's got some tools that I think might be interesting. You know, Baltimore doesn't have a tendency to give up on pitchers, but they really needed that Blaze Alexander to be, a guy that they can use as a utility person. But if you pull up Cade Stroud and take a look at what he did last year, now granted it was only 25 games, but his chart is eye-popping. You know, he's got really good fastball velocity, but he also really limited hard contact, which I love, you know. And so he's a guy that could kind of be flying under the radar a little bit in Arizona that could get some save opportunities, I think. Cade Stroud, Stroud, for those of you listening at home. I think he's definitely someone you might want to take a look at. Saul Frank is out for the year. Justin Martinez and Puck, we don't know when they're going to be back or if they're going to be back. Stroud, to me, is a nice start throw if you're in that 50th round and looking for somebody who might be able to get you some saves.
Man, yeah, his that looks pretty good. I mean, I hadn't actually looked at his Savant page until just now, but
yeah.
I mean, he didn't, you know, he didn't pitch enough to qualify in a lot of categories, but he was high up there in a lot of them. I mean, you know, not a great strikeout rate, but got a good amount of chase, you know, decent enough whiff rate as well, XERA, XBA, all that looks really, really good too. Doesn't give up a lot of hard contact either. Only a 1.5% barrel rate allowed, 86 mile an hour average EV allowed. So, yeah, that's actually pretty good. Gets a good amount of ground balls. Yeah, you're talking me into a little Cade Stroud here. I like it. You know, pitch mix here, cutter, you know, deeper pitch mix than you see for most relievers. Five pitch mix here, four seamer, sinker, cutter, curveball, sweeper. You know, not any huge whiff rates there, but a few that are right around 30%. So, yeah, that's it. That's intriguing because, yeah, when it came to Ginkle or Seawald, my answer was no.
I got you.
I don't want either. Ginkle coming off a, you know, he was better in 2023 and 2024. I'll give him that. But coming off a terrible year last year, so I was never a Ginkle guy even before the bad year. So, like,
right.
I'm not intrigued there. And then Seawald, he can never stay healthy for the most part. 19 2/3 last year. He's an ERA above 4.3 each of the last 2 years. I'm not super into the sweeper. I'll watch his sweeper all day. That's a very beautiful looking sweeper. Really fun on you know GIFs on Twitter. But yeah, in terms of having him on my fantasy team, nah, I'm good with that, both of those two guys. So, but yeah, good dart throw there with Cade Stroud. Next one up here. I mean, we got two more here. For the National League. Mm-hmm. We're going over to the St. Louis Cardinals. You know, they had their guy for a long time, and now they're kind of mixing and matching, you know, probably looking at either Riley O'Brien. I almost said Riley Romero. I was combining the two names. Riley O'Brien or JoJo Romero. It looks like projections are pretty split on these two guys. They're pretty close in terms of, you know, projected saves here. I do think O'Brien is the higher ADP guy here. Yeah, O'Brien is, where is he? Yeah, he's the 25th reliever off the board, right around pick 225. Romero was not in the top 30 in reliever ADP. So are you leaning that way with O'Brien, or are you more of a Romero guy?
No, I think Romero's going to get traded. You know, it's been kind of a hot rumor here the last couple of months is that they're going to try to move him. I'm not crazy about O'Brien either. I mean, he's kind of a 31-year-old journeyman. There is a guy in St. Louis that I really do like. And it's a guy that we talked about in Arizona that Rick Graham and I brought up in our presentation. It's also a guy that Greg Jude and I talked about on our last panel as well. And that's Matt Svaundsson. He's a 27-year-old righty. He appeared in 39 games last year for them. Good strikeout rate. Again, if you look at his stat cast, you'll like a lot of what you see there. He's got a 29% K percentage, 35.9% hard hit percentage. Fastball velo is about 97. Really limited hard contact, and is a guy that I think could end up sneaking into that role. I don't think that they're – I think anytime you have three guys that are trying for a job, you probably don't have anybody. And so I think when you look at what St. Louis is doing, I could see a situation where O'Brien starts the year with the job. Maybe he does okay, and they move him for something to, you know, try to get some value for him, and that Svaundsson kind of takes over that role. I do like him quite a bit. I saw him pitch in person last year as well. Big guy coming downhill, really good extension. This is an intriguing name. I mean, I probably would not draft O'Brien or Romero, and I would probably do a dart throw on Svaundsson at the end if I was, you know, desperate for trying to find somebody that could be speculative for saves.
Yeah, definitely has an Arizona feel where, like, the top two guys on paper just aren't that intriguing. Though I would say I do like the St. Louis duo more than the Arizona duo. Mm. But, yeah, this bullpen was one I've been pretty much avoiding for the most part. But, yeah, I do like Svaundsson as well. You know, a lot of good metrics on the Savant page. A 29% strikeout rate last year, 8.5% walk rate, ERA under 2. You know, no big whiff rate offerings here, but, you know, he mixes well. Like, sinker, sweeper. Mm-hmm. cutter. You know, he pitches in three different velocity bands too. Like, you know, mid to upper 90s with that sinker around 97, cutters around 92, sweeper 87. So I think he mixes pretty well, and does get a decent amount of whiff. Though the chase rate not super great, but yeah, that's another decent specs add there or targets in deeper league drafts. Matt Svensson, though, he needs to change that V to a W just to make it easier for me. My mouth does not like saying Svensson. I just
no, I know. I know. I'm not Scandinavian either, my man. I know what you mean.
Just those combination of letters my mouth just does not like. So just do me a favor, Matt, and just make that a W and make it easier on me. I kid. But last one here, the Washington Nationals. If you look at the entirety of their just pitching staff, rotation, and bullpen, it's just like it's not good. I'm trying to not be mean here, but it just looks like puke-worthy. When you look at, you know, like their ace, quote-unquote, is Miles Mikolas or Kate DeVolley or Brad Lord. But in the bullpen, it's not much better. But, you know, looking at either Clayton Beter or Cole Henry, for the most part, those are the top two on the depth charts here. Again, a lot of projections are pretty split on these two guys mm-hmm. as well. Beter, you know, both these guys are actually former, you know, decently kind of ranked and thought of pitching prospects. You know, Henry coming up, you know, through the Nat system, they drafted him back in the shortened 2020 draft. I was a big Cole Henry guy back in the day, but then he had a lot of injury concerns that kind of bumped him way down. Beter, you know, more of the upside flyer going through the Yankee system. They got him via trade last year at the deadline. So who do you like here between Beter or Henry this year?
I would lean Beter here. I'm not crazy about the situation. It reeks of kind of Kyle Finnegan, where you're going to get those painful saves. You know, you might get a handful of saves with a 5 ERA. There is an intriguing person here, though, as well, that I would like to talk about real quick. Rule 5 pick that they had this year, Griff McGarry, who was a Philadelphia prospect for a while, and they tinkered with him in the bullpen a little bit last year, 2 years ago, I should say, and he started predominantly last year. He's slated for a long relief role in Washington, I believe, right now, but he's got some eye-popping stuff, and it was definitely a guy that was high up on prospect lists a few years back. I'm sure that you probably are familiar with him more than I am, but I don't see any reason why he might not be able to get an opportunity. I mean, he's only got to beat out Jackson Rutledge and Gus Varland and Richard Lovelady, who was one of my favorite names in the sport. But I don't see why, you know, that couldn't happen. I mean, Beter did a decent job last year. I think he is that type of guy, though. I think the walks are going to really be a killer, and I don't really foresee good ratios. You know, I'm going to probably avoid this altogether. But again, if you're in really, really deep leagues and you're looking for somebody at the end, McGarry, it could be a little interesting.
Yeah, he. I saw him a few times live when he was in the Philly system, and he's one of those guys where the stuff is really good, and he's always had, you know, pretty good strikeout rates, but it's like he just didn't know where the heck it was going.
Exactly. Half the time.
And that led to a lot of blow-up outings, and I always thought he'd be better in the bullpen. That's what looks like it will be the path here for him in Washington. Yeah, I don't want either Beter or Henry. If I had to pick one, I do, you know, agree with you there. I would lean Beter, but I also, when I was doing talking pitching prospects a few episodes ago, I kind of made a claim that, you know, I think Luis Perales moves into the role by the end of the year.
Yeah,
I like his stuff is really good. I don't think they're gonna, you know, move him to the bullpen right now, but I could see him just bringing him up and just to keep his innings down after missing him a good chunk of time over the last year or two, putting him in the bullpen, but then him just being so good there that they just keep him there. That's kind of how I'm, you know, imagining this playing out. I think he could be a really good reliever. And I think if it doesn't work out, you know, in the rotation, I think Harleen Suzano could be a really good closer.
Yeah.
They got some stuff coming up through the minor leagues, that's for sure. And, you know, in Griff McGarry as well. So they got some pretty intriguing stuff, you know, guys that could step into the role. But yeah, Beter, Henry, yeah, neither one are super intriguing there. But yeah, I will lean Beter as well. So those are a few painful situations there, but some sneaky spec guys to keep an eye on in your drafts or on the waiver wire as well. Let's move into, you know, over to some saves holds talk here, because I know a lot of leagues, you know, value holds in some capacity, whether it's straight up saves holds or one of the, you know, many variations that Fantrax has. They have like 8 different variations or something like that. But let's show these guys some love here. So who are some guys, you know, Mike, that in these, let's just say like a saves holds format, get that big bump? I mean, there's a few guys that I think jump right off the page at you, like Hunter Gaddis, Brian Abreu, you know, even Andrew Kittredge, you know, Jason Adom, guys like that. Even Jeremiah Estrada, these guys that have been high up there in holds. But who are some names that you see that just jump off with a lot more value in those formats, that value holds?
Well, you brought up a couple of guys already, but, you know, if you look at Toronto, you know, you've got Tyler Rogers, who, you know, will get a lot of holds there. He always is over 30. Brendan Little was a guy last year, a lefty for them, that got a ton of work. And also had a ton of holds. So he had a 30% strikeout rate, and he had 30 holds. So the guys that you want to take a look at. I think on the White Sox, I know, you know, we talked a little bit about them off air. You know, they obviously signed Sir Anthony Dominguez, and he's going to be their closer. But they have a young guy there named Grant Taylor, who you should become familiar with. I know you are because of your work. But a lot of people are going to see that he's not going to get saves, but I think he's going to get a ton of holds. They're going to use him a lot as a two-inning type of guy in the middle of games. He eventually will probably be a starter for them. He could be the closer, but I don't see that happening. They really have him earmarked for the rotation down the road. But the White Sox bullpen is going to be surprisingly better this year. I think I will die on that hill. I mean, Sean Newcomb was a really nice addition. Jordan Leisure was the closer at the end of last year. They've got Taylor. I don't know what they'll get out of Jordan Hicks, if anything, but Mike Vassell was another guy that was really useful for them last year in a multiple inning role. I definitely think that Taylor is a guy that is an up and coming holds type of guy. You brought up Gaddis. Gaddis is great. Another guy on Cleveland that I really like in that format is Eric Sobrowski. He's a very vicious lefty that's coming up with them, and he's going to get a lot of work this year. Definitely somebody that you should know. Tyler Holton in Detroit is another one, depending on what his role might be. A very valuable pitcher. Definitely could be a guy that's, you know, looking at holds. I'm avoiding Minnesota just kind of as a rule. I just don't really know what's. I would really like to see Taj Bradley be the closer there, but I, you know, Liam Hendricks is there, so, you know, maybe he will end up getting that job. Taylor Rogers looks like the closer right now. But those are some names that I think that you might want to pay attention to. Also, Jose Ferrer in Seattle, you know, he, moving from Washington to Seattle, he could be a guy who gets a ton of opportunities at getting holds as well. So those are just a few names that I'm kind of thinking about. You know, obviously there's the Philadelphia bullpen, but it's hard to say how that's all going to work out. Brad Keller is there now. So Brad Keller could get some of those Strom opportunities, even though he's a different hand. I realize that. Those are all kind of guys that I love. Graham Ashcraft. I could talk about him all day.
Oh yeah. I think I like him too. Yeah.
He's going to get a lot of holds, and you know, if Pagan, you know, should somehow slide into the toilet, you know, Ashcraft could be a guy that sneaks into getting a bunch of save opportunities as well. Also in Pittsburgh, another dart throw name to just know, and it's an old friend from Colorado. Justin Lawrence is kind of flying under the radar, and Dennis Santana will be the closer to start the year there. They could look to trade him, or he could flop. Justin Lawrence was tremendous for them down the stretch. You might remember that for about a 2 or 3 year period in Colorado, people thought he was going to be the closer. That never happened, but he resurfaced in Pittsburgh last year and was really, really good. So just a few names to know there. I mentioned Cade Stroud already. You know, those are some people that you might want to circle, especially at the end of really, really deep drafts when you're looking for somebody that might be able to provide you something that no one else has seen.
Yeah, a lot of good names there. And I'm glad you, Justin Lawrence, he was always really intriguing, but yeah, Colorado, right? I mean, like, I don't want anything to do with any arm on Colorado.
Right.
Even like Victor Vodnik, who we didn't talk about, but he's the guy there. He might get you, you know, 20 saves, something like that. But I have zero desire to go after Victor Vodnik, maybe as an RP3, I guess, because he'll probably get you the saves, but outside of that, no desire. I mean, Halverson was supposed to be a thing. He hasn't really become a thing yet. You know, they got Juan Mejia, Jimmy Hergets, Brennan Bernardino from the Red Sox via trade, but
it's a barren wasteland in Colorado at this point, really. But
Always seems to be. So yeah, let's close up the show by talking about Colorado Rock. No, I'm just kidding. We're not going to be that mean, but we'll close up the show with a couple younger names that maybe could emerge, you know, this year or in the coming years. I mean, Grant Taylor was going to be one of my names I talked about. I like him a lot as well, so I'm glad you brought him up. And I already talked about another one in Luis Perales, who I think emerges in the bullpen role. But one more I wanted to talk about, then I'll give Mike the floor to close out the show. A guy that I was never actually that high on as a prospect when he was a starter, but now that he's in the bullpen, I like him a decent bit, and that's Connor Phillips with the Cincinnati Reds. I mean, this guy could not hit the broadside of a barn when he was a prospect, super high walk rates, and that's still the case. He had a 12% walk rate last year, but 32.7% K rate. This is just in 25 innings. He had a 2.88 ERA. He's a guy that throws upper 90s four-seamer, and a really good mid-80s sweeper that had a 53% whiff rate and a 0.53 batting average against last year. You know, mixes in these occasional curveball, but primarily that four-seam sweeper. So, you know, he's got the stuff. I mean, he's got to be pretty erratic. So maybe the ratios aren't super great. And right now, he's a guy that he's not anywhere remotely close to the closer role in that depth chart right now. So, but like a deeper dynasty league, I think he's like a guy that you pick up now for free. And maybe he moves into a higher leverage role later in the year or in 2027 and beyond. So Connor Phillips is a name here that I kind of like a decent bit nowadays, now that he's cheap and in the bullpen. But any names for you here, Mike, the young guys that could emerge?
It's always hard to look at that, I think, and have a crystal ball, right? Because you don't really see teams like teams in the minor leagues don't really develop closers, right? Guys get to the show, they exhibit the skill, and then they kind of, you know, move into that type of a situation, you know? So it's a really tough question for me to be able to answer based on the criteria that we're kind of looking at and looking at somebody that's young that could, you know, become something that's, you know, bigger and greater than what he is now. You know, we talked a little bit about Svensson and we talked a little bit about Cade Stroud. They're not super young guys, but they're guys that I have circled it, people that I'm interested in looking at. You know, one guy that we did not mention in San Francisco that could have a big role this year is Joel Puggiero. He's not a young guy, but, you know, with Ryan Walker, given his troubles over the years and the fact that they seem to like to use him in a different type of role, you know, that he's somebody that really could kind of, you know, take on a role there. Also, you know, Randy Rodriguez is going to miss the year, but Randy Rodriguez is a guy to really remember for 27. You know, he could step into a role back in San Francisco. He's electric, as you know, just somebody that's really an important guy there that they're not going to have access to this year, but is clearly the best arm in their bullpen when he's healthy. So I feel like I'm kind of copying out a little bit. But, you know, another guy that you could kind of think about, too, that is coming back from injury that I'm super intrigued in, and it's going to sound like a homer pick, is Prolander Baroa. You know, he hurt his arm last year. He's a guy that could absolutely climb that White Sox ladder quickly and be a difference maker at the back end of their bullpen. I was a little surprised, you know, the White Sox signed Dominguez to a two-year contract, and I think it is a legit two-year contract as well. I don't think it's 1 year with an option. Maybe it is an option, but, you know, I could see a definite situation where, you know, they get something out of him and then they're able to move him for something, and that that role becomes open, and maybe it's Leisure or maybe it's Baroa. And the White Sox are up and coming. They're going to be better this year. I don't know how much better, but they're definitely going to have some intriguing late inning options there towards the end of the season, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what a good upside arms in that White Sox bullpen, whether it be right now or coming down the pipe there. So and another guy, Wilkerman Gonzalez, who some of the best. I saw him a lot when he was here. He was in the Sox system for a handful of years. So I saw him in Double A. Wiffle ball stuff like that ball.
Yeah.
Moves,
yeah.
But he just didn't always know where it was going. So if he can somehow harness that, maybe Wilkerman Gonzalez turns into something, but who knows? It's hard to predict, especially with these guys that have been so wild for so long. But that's going to wrap us up, Mike. You know, thank you so much for joining me. Always a pleasure talking with you, and good episode here talking about relievers. But what do you got going on right now?
Oh, geez, what don't I have going on right now is a better question, right? So the Glarf draft is this weekend. I now consider being in the Earth League and being in Glarf as my home league. Those are my family and friends there. I love those guys. Can't wait to see them all this weekend. So got that going on. We'll start doing those reliever pieces here shortly again and highlighting some of these guys and looking at charts. I'm going to be doing a couple of waiver wire pieces over at Rotoballer every week as well, starting here in the next few weeks. I also, I didn't let you know this, but I also am going to be doing some playing time coverage for the White Sox at HQ. And so, nice. Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. That's always kind of been in the back of my mind. That was always, to me, getting to HQ was kind of like, quote unquote, making it, you know. And so I'm going to be doing that as well. And then the Fantasy Baseball Beat will be back next month, too. Dave and I are going to start recording. We're going to absolutely have you on at some point early on when you're available. And, you know, just always love coming on with you. You know, I say it every time we're on, and Eric, not only are you a great friend and a mentor to so many in this community, every opportunity that I've gotten in the community has been almost directly commensurate with my relationship with you, because you were able to get me in at places that I probably wouldn't have been able to get into on my own merit. Now, I needed my foot in the door, and I was able to do that, and I've worked hard to be able to get there, but I'm always grateful to you. And to you for your friendship and your leadership and your mentorship in the field. If you don't know Eric personally and you meet him in Arizona, he's one of the kindest human beings that you will ever meet. And I am always so grateful for your friendship and support over the years. I owe you a huge debt of gratitude. And anytime you need me to come on, I will always make time to come on, because I just love talking with you. You're a great friend, and just can't thank you enough for all the things you've done for me.
The feeling's mutual. Like I always said, like I could stop writing right this second, and I would still keep in touch with you. Like we'd still talk and be friends, even if we both left the industry today.
Absolutely.
So, but yeah, thank you for the kind words. Right back at you. Like one of the best in the business, one of the hardest working guys, one of the best guys, Mike Carter at MDRC0508 on Twitter. Writes to me over at Rotoballer now. Rotoballer's great. I mean, so much content, Rotoballer. It's ridiculous. The draft kit is great, well worth the price tag. You got so many tools. You can do your team sync, custom rankings, you know, mock drafts, ATC projections, lineup optimizer. You know, there's a lot of great stuff, content and beyond, at Rotoballer. So go check that out, rotoballer.com/MLB, and check out all the great stuff there. I will be back with you again next week. Got a few episodes next week. But until then, everyone take care.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side, your Sleep Number setting. Enjoy personalized comfort for better sleep night after night. And now, during our President's Day sale, take 50% off our limited edition bed, plus an extra $100 off all mattresses. End Saturday. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.